Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Biz Radio U, pushing knowledge further by spotlighting the best in business.
Hello and welcome, everybody. I'm Adam Wozniak, and I'm joined here today by my co-hosts, John McDonald and Alex Stoker. How's it going, guys?
Hey, good. Good to be here. How are you doing today?
Doing well.
Doing good.
So what's been going on with you guys lately? I haven't seen you in a while.
Been catching up on classes. Last night, actually saw the premiere of the new Spider-Man movie.
Oh, nice. How was it?
It was really good. I saw it with a friend that doesn't like any of those type of movies, and he was just, laughing himself to death.
The best one in 12 years, right?
Right, yeah.
Well, longer than that. When did the first one come out? Like 2002? 2003? Something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
Jeez, a long time ago. What about you, Joy?
Yeah, I've also been busy with my summer classes, so I've been taking a lot of tests lately. They like to cram it all in a couple months.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I've got two tests coming up, and they're on the same day, so that's going to be pretty interesting.
Is that just in a July class, or is the full length?
The full length. And
so that's not as bad. You're not there for like 4 hours.
That's cumulative.
Ooh, that's no fun.
So I'm going to be kind of busy.
Oh, that's horrible. Sorry to hear that.
That's all good.
You'll do good. We have faith in you.
Thank you.
Yeah, we believe. So today we have a very special guest, Mr. Paul Beckett of Beckett's Carpet and Upholstery Cleaning Services, and he's the owner and operator. How you doing, Paul?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
So just to start us off, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your business?
Well, the business is pretty simple, carpet and upholstery cleaning. We've been doing that since 1945. I'm third generation in this, grew up from cradle to now,
oh, wow. 50
years later. That's pretty much what we've done. My grandfather started the business back in 1945. And what a lot of people don't know, is carpet, when you guys grew up, wall-to-wall carpeting was something that you just think you have. All the houses had it.
Right.
But back prior to World War II, you had rugs or flooring. Carpeting wall-to-wall was only for the very expensive hotels and for the very wealthy and the elite. And so then after World War II, textiles picked back up. They started putting carpet down. And then, of course, that created an industry. Mm-hmm. And so it was probably 41, 42 that the carpet cleaning industry actually came into existence.
Okay, wow. I didn't realize all that. Yeah. Now that I think about my grandmother's house, and it was like just, like you said, gigantic rugs.
Right.
And she lived at the Depression. Mm-hmm. So it's like that, not one of those like post-World War II
right.
households. Everything was...
What they would do is they'd take those rugs out of the house, hang them on the line, and they would beat them.
I mean, that little tennis racket looking thing.
Just get out there and beat the heck out of the rugs, knock all the dirt out, and then drag them back in.
It sent a message.
When I was misbehaving.
It's like, oh, boy.
That could be me.
yeah. So, three generations. Wow, that's... Right. How do you maintain that kind of success through, five decades?
Well, you treat your customers the way you want to be treated, and you take care of your clients. Last time we did any real advertising was probably 1978.
Wow.
Everything is purely word of mouth. I don't advertise on the trucks. You won't find me, I'm not one of the Johnny come lately, fly by night, big billboard type customers. Don't run a bunch of specials. It's just a very simple little thing. You walk in, you do what you say you're going to do, and that's it.
And that's usually good enough for people.
Yeah. People, if you show up when you say you're going to show up and you do what you say you're going to do, that generally works. I mean, it's a good business model.
Oh, yeah. I completely agree. Now, really, one of the first things came to my mind whenever I heard that it was three generations. How does that transition work between each generation?
Well, about where I am right now, 55, 60 years old, you get to the point that you say, you know what, at 62, I don't want to be lifting furniture. I don't want to move a chair. I don't want to move a sofa. I'm tired. I'm done. And so you just pass it along. Hopefully you have a child that wants to step in and take over the business. And that worked for my grandfather and worked for my father. Now, with me at 22, I told my father I'd never clean carpet or upholstery again. He could forget about it. I had an MIS, and I was going to work for King & Spalding and SunTrust Banks, and which I did. And then after my third corporate layoff, I'm like, cleaning carpet's not such a bad thing. So in 2003, when Dad had pretty much decided he wanted to completely retire, I took over the business.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's something else right there.
Yeah, and so like you said, three generations of this. I'm sure you guys have a great family dynamic working together. Yeah. Is the business itself only run by family members, or are there, you know, outsiders that are in the business?
No, if you're not a family member, you do not work for us. So you know who's coming into your home, you know what's coming into your home. You know, we don't have to do the criminal background checks, you know, because your family. We know what you've done. We know where you live.
Yeah, that's really neat. I know lots of businesses, one of the main struggles is hiring people that are dependable. There's only so much you know about a person, even when you set them down and do an interview. You know, they call it like the honeymoon phase. Someone might be great for a few weeks, few months, and then all of a sudden they're slacking off, or, you know, worst comes to worst, they're doing something illegal or stealing from you. So definitely working with family. I mean, you know who you're working with, so that's great.
Yeah, we found it to be best. We tried back in the late 70s and the early 80s. We looked at expanding. Like I said, we've been working here in the Atlanta area since 1966. But I think it was about 77, 78. Dad looked at picking up a couple trucks and expanding things out and brought on some people. We trained them, taught them, and was teaching them the business. But as they began to, you know, see the money that came in from that versus what they were being paid, they decided, you know what, we can do this ourselves. And they decided they want to try to steal our clients. And so at that point, we said, you know what, forget this. You know, we're not going there. We sold off the two trucks and said, it's family.
Yeah.
In a conversation.
That's probably the smarter choice to make in the end, but man, that's messy.
It is. And it works for us, though. It works for us. You know, all of us, Dad had four kids. I had four kids. My grandfather had four kids. So, you know.
There's a pattern there.
There's a pattern there.
If it works for, you know, well, it's been working for a long time.
Well, it also teaches one of the things that we, you know, all of us have worked our children through the business. But it teaches you a work ethic, and it teaches you a work development. And, it, you know, you as you, when you're young and you learn that, you know, you have to work to earn, and you have to develop nothing. Everything's not just given to you. You
know? Right.
It's you earn what you get. And it's worked out real nice. I mean, oldest daughter, she graduated Air Force Academy. Son is doing a corporate job with a company called Booster. And so, you know, life is good. Life is good. And he's 21 working in the finance department. I mean, you know, hey.
Hey, go get it right there.
That's right. That's right.
And do you currently have a lot of competitors in the Atlanta area?
Oh, there's tons of competitors, but not in my, I would say at my level, because I am considered a master craftsman. I'm skilled in all phases and all aspects, because, you know, there's not just hot water extraction. You have rotary foam, you have dry extraction. You have, you know, just several different methods of bonnet cleaning. So there's all types of carpet cleaning out there, and there's no specific type that fits all jobs. So, you know, you have a lot of what I call big box companies who do a lot of advertising, pay a lot of money, but what their cost per client is versus some of your smaller people or not. And when you go with the smaller company, what you get is you get the personalized service that you don't get from I'm not going to name competitors, but some of the big box companies, you don't get that personalized service. And like, once again, you know who and what's walking in your door when you go with a smaller company.
That's very true.
You said MasterCraft. So like whenever, would y'all have any, call-ins or like emergency cleanings or anything like that from any?
Oh, we do.
Big time people.
When you have floods that come across, like the heavy torrential rains we had, and carpet's totally, you know, saturated, or you've had water come in, you'll have to go out and you have to do things like that. Or you have a party coming over and your kids come running through with mud across their feet.
Ten minutes for the guests.
Exactly. You know, but what I generally do with something along those lines is I'll instruct somebody what to do in order to get that out of the carpet on their own. Because, mm-hmm. You know, a trained monkey can pull a wand. You know, but how do you get something out without having the equipment? That's not hard.
Right. You
know, that's knowledge.
So do you have any little tips or tricks or anything like that?
Sure. If you have a pet and your pet urinates on your carpet, you have 15 minutes. What, you keep a bottle of white vinegar around, and with the white vinegar and 50-50 solution, white vinegar and water, pour that on the little spot, let it sit for about 5 minutes, take a towel, walk over and blot the spot, and that'll pull that up. The other thing is, you know, you don't need, everyone wants to go buy the Resolve, or they want to buy their Carpet Fresh or the different big products you'll see on the shelves at the grocery store. It's soap and water, folks. That's all it is. It's soap and water. If you want to get something out, it's soap and water. Carpet is a textile. Your shirt is a textile. Your pants are a textile. If you get something on them, good chances the same thing that you use on your clothes is what you can use on your carpet, and it will get it out. Hmm. Now, don't leave the soap and the residue down there. You're going to have to rinse it. And if you have a shop vac, use a shop vac to vacuum it out. It's not rocket science.
Now, I am asking for a friend here. What do you do with a Sharpie?
A Sharpie? alcohol.
Yeah.
Rubbing alcohol. You want to break that up. Mineral spirits, but in minute amounts. Don't go crazy.
You mean like droplets or just like a little...
Like a rag. Wet the rag and then wipe across. Then work from the outside to the inside. If you put that directly on the carpet, you're going to cause dilapidation and delamination. You're actually going to eat the glue on the back of the carpet.
That's
not a good thing. So you don't want to do that. So. But mineral spirits is an old trick, you know, which probably if there's other carpet cleaners out there, they're just, you know, pulling their hair out right now. You're saying you don't do that. Well, you can do that. You just don't do it in with large amounts.
Right. So how do you guys figure that sort of solution out? Do y'all do any testing, or is it just something
we've been in this industry since the infancy of the industry, so it's just years and years and years of training, of knowing what you can and what you can't do. My grandfather developed a lot of things. My father developed a lot of things. We work for a company called the Furniture Clinic of Georgia, and we do all their claims for the moving claims. So when the moving companies come through and they have their furniture that is grease on the back of it, or it's damaged, or dirt, or it rains on, you got something happens to that. We go out and handle those moving claims. Back in the early 70s, before the movers shrunk wrap everything, they just used to throw blankets over it. So as the furniture would get dirty, Dad would go out and learn and develop things. And you know, there was a warehouse he could go over to and work in that warehouse. If he cleaned it, he got paid for it. If he didn't clean it, he didn't. And so it was. That's how you develop things. My father used to teach classes for what was the National Carpet Cleaning Association, and they would fly him out to Hawaii, and he'd actually teach people how to clean. And he can sit up here and he'll go through and he'll rattle off all the pH cleaning and all the stuff that just bores the absolute mess out of you. But I'm a little more straightforward. You know, I'll use layman's terms and not confuse the world.
Yeah, well, we appreciate that.
Go for it. So going back earlier, you mentioned that you guys don't really advertise as much as compared to your competitors, correct?
Oh, that's absolutely.
So I'm curious with that. You know, you have to spread your business through word of mouth. So is a lot of your clientele, would you say a lot of it's repeat business, or do you guys get a lot of new, I guess, referrals that, you know, past clients have told their friends about?
No, majority of my business is repeat business. Most of our clients, once we're servicing a client, that client generally stays with us. My retention rate's probably about 80-85% is where my retention rate is.
Wow.
You know, and I've got a database of 750 clients. And you get to a point that you just can't take any more clients on, because if each one of those clients decided they wanted to have their carpet cleaned in the same year, I'd be a very tired person.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't over-advertise and you don't bring more than what you can actually handle in. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, it was back, I think, 83 or 84, my dad stopped taking clients completely. It's just I can't take any more.
Yeah, you don't want to outgrow your shell.
Exactly. So you just keep that business. You keep the business in play.
Well, I mean, that's a good problem to have.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
For sure. And how often do you recommend to your clients that they get their carpet cleaned?
That's a good question. That actually depends on the household and what's in the household. If it's a couple seniors, then they probably need to look at every 24 months, depending on how much they drop food and have accidents and whatnot. If it's a young household with three or four kids running around, then they probably need to go every 12 months, maybe more. You know, if you've got, if it's a couple with a pet, maybe one child, you're probably looking about every 18 months. And a lot of it depends on traffic and occurrences. And, you know, a lot of people say annually is a great plan. I would say annually to every 18 months for most people is right. But again, if you're seniors or retired, you're probably only looking every 24 to 30 months.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Now, I was thinking more about whenever you mentioned the flood repair and things like that. Now, how would you go about like cleaning the whole house that's flooded?
The whole house is flooded. That's when you walk in and you're like, wow, this is a problem. The very first thing that you do, if it is recoverable and if it is something that you can't handle, the very first thing you do is you pull the carpet off the floor and you get the pad out. The pad mm-hmm. has to go out. And once the pad is out, then you start extracting water out of the carpet and out of the flooring area.
How would you do that?
With extractors, just large carpet extractors, large vacuums.
Oh, okay.
And so they actually, you know, attaching that to a wand and just pulling all of that out of there and then beginning to dry all the surface areas. Mm-hmm. Of course, then you have to check, depending on how severe the flood is. I mean, if it's something that's up on the baseboards, now you're talking about potential sheetrock issues, and you got to watch out for mold and mildew and that type of thing. But if it's just stayed on the main surface and you can get in there fast enough, you can generally get that dried out. And you just take some large fans, large blowers, put them up underneath the carpet itself, dry the carpet out. Once that's completely dried, front and back, and the under surface is completely dry, then you can go in and put new pad down, restretch the carpet, and put it back in place.
See, I mean, whenever I think like a flood in the house, I just assume if it's like a couple inches above the baseboard there, you know, if you walk in, it's like a puddle. Is that?
If you walk in and it's just completely underwater everywhere, you've got a real issue. I mean, you've got a real issue. Now you're talking about sheetrock, you're talking about molding, you're talking about, of course, the padding's got to go. The chances of saving the carpet at that point are probably nil.
Yeah.
That's where you're still going in, getting the water out, but now you're taking an extracto knife because what you're doing is you're getting it to a point that you can actually carry it out.
Right.
And then you're looking at more drying the house than trying to save the carpet.
But it's heavy too, man.
Carpet will hold up to 300 times its weight in dirt and debris.
Wow.
And water is even more than that.
Jeez. Oh. And that's a hard day's work.
How often do you see that happen, like flooding issues around here?
You get a fair amount if you're down where if you're actually in a flood zone. But the most common type of flood or type of issue we have is either a toilet that's overflowed, and of course, homeowner gets that stopped, or you have a hot water heater that it cracks or explodes, and that will that'll flood and make a mm-hmm. mess. Mm-hmm. But it's not an everyday occurrence for the whatever the population is here in Atlanta. 500, 600,000. You're probably talking maybe 100 a week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What would you say the most reoccurring issue is or problem that clients have?
The biggest problem clients have is their kids and messing their carpet up.
Chocolate milk.
Is there a specific type of stain or issue? Like, is it chocolate milk?
it's red Georgia clay. It's red Georgia clay. For those that live in apartment complexes, it's generally the asphalt that they like to spray down, and that black asphalt comes on your shoes because it takes 18 feet of some type of mat where that's going to come off your feet. So you usually track that straight into your house mm-hmm. and then track that across your carpet. Then you've got, of course, the black asphalt and the black traffic lines.
They just redid the street in front of our house. And we rent and we don't have carpet or anything, but it messed up our little mat.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was like dark gray, and then now it's like black.
Exactly. It's a beautiful thing when they do that to you. But generally what will happen is a dog will go outside and it'll come back in with mud all over its feet, and that'll track through the house. Or the kids will go out and they'll play in the mud, and they'll bring mm-hmm. that back in. Red Georgia clay is the most prominent thing. Get a lot of calls for red wine, And you know, the biggest key is with a red is it's not coming out. Forget about it.
Does that resonate with you, Julie?
Yes, so. I have a couple red wine stains in my house everywhere.
Yeah. A couple everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. Red wine, red Kool-Aid, red High C. If it's red, it's not coming out. You're done. Forget about it.
Yeah, new carpet. That's what my family's doing. My whole house, new carpet soon. But
find a plant. Put it on top of the spot. Life is good.
Yeah, pretty much. Another little carpet. Just put a carpet over a carpet. That's what we do, like rugs over rugs.
There you go. There you go. Yeah.
Well, since you've been in the industry for so long, would you say for your own personal house, do you tend to kind of, are you more aware of things that can stain your carpets or furniture, or are you kind of confident that whatever spill you do have, you'll be able to get rid of it? So you're kind of more relaxed about that.
I actually am anal retentive.
Okay.
to be honest with you, you know, I know what will stain and I know what will not stain. I know what I can do and what I can't do. I am fairly relaxed when something happens. However, you know, it's like if, you know, you eat your food in the kitchen, you eat your food in the dining room, you don't bring it into the den, you don't bring it across the carpet, you don't take food back to your bedrooms. You know, bad idea.
I'm guilty of that.
Me too. Reason I have all the stains.
Yeah. So soda pop, you know, needs to stay out of your bedroom. It doesn't need to go there. Take a glass of water wherever you want. I don't care.
Yeah. Jeez.
And do you ever work with houses that people smoke in and you have to pull out smoke out of the carpet?
I do, and actually, smoke is rough. Smoke is rough, because you've got to get the odor, and you got to get a lot of that. You need ozone, and actually clear that out. We go into some fire burns and try to get that out. The biggest problem you have with smoke, though, is not so much the carpet; it is the drywall. And once the smoke gets into the drywall, that's almost impossible to get out. You actually have to seal that drywall up in order to get rid of the smell throughout the house.
Mm-hmm. Because it just stains everything.
The smoke itself, the odor actually penetrates and absorbs into, it's like baking soda. It'll just absorb and penetrate into the drywall. And it's almost impossible to get out of there.
It's replace room.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Wow. It's, well, you go in, wash the walls thoroughly. You can deodorize the walls thoroughly and then come in and permacoat or kills across the exterior of the wall. And that'll seal the odor, you know, into the interior. So,
okay.
And if you do that on both sides, then it's going up, it's not coming through.
Would you say that's one of the more challenging jobs you have to deal with?
Yes, but I really don't do that.
Okay.
Yeah, it's, I know the things that I... the things that I don't want to do, I don't like to do, I'm at the point in my life, I don't do.
Is there anything that you've done in the past that you would say you wouldn't want to do again? Maybe something that was really challenging that you were able to do?
Oh, the black rings around the edges of the carpet. I absolutely hate it. If people don't clean their air ducts on a regular basis, then what's going to happen? The air filters. Then you'll get this, begin to develop this black ring all around the edge of your carpet. And when you walk into a room, you'll see a black ring going all the way around. That's because people have not changed their air filters regularly enough. And then they want you to get that up. Well, to get that up, there's really only one way to do it. And you have to get down on your hands and knees. You spray a chemical on there. You scrub it. Well, the problem with that is that there's carpet tacks underneath that thing. And so every time you start scrubbing, there's little nails poking you in the fingers. And, you know, a little brush won't do it because then you're going to mess up the baseboard. You're going to scratch up the baseboard. So you really have to use a rag and your fingers to scrub that. So, no, that's something I pretty much refuse to do. If you want me to do that, that's going to cost you $2.25 per linear foot.
That is very specific.
Yeah. And you take a 10 by 10 room. We're going to take a rocket science to figure that one out.
Yeah.
Trying to avoid it at all costs.
Yeah. You're going to pay me very well to do that.
I'm going to start changing my filters more often.
Good idea.
Wow.
Now, you mentioned, we're getting some information on you. Something about Scotchgard. You want to talk a little bit about Scotchgard?
Yeah. What a lot of the carpet cleaners like to do is upcharge. They'll come in and upsell. And they'll say, do you want to pay for Scotch guarding? Well, the Scotch guarding that the carpet manufacturers put on your carpet, that's done in a vat at the factory. And so the carpet's actually completely saturated with the Scotchgard and then brought back through and then goes through a drying process.
And what is that supposed to do exactly?
That repels, it's supposed to repel stains and water and, you know, that makes it, if you've ever.
So like a hydrophobic?
On, well, you ever done any tent camping at all?
Not a long time.
No, okay. Well, the first thing you do with a tent is you take waterproofing and you spray the waterproofing on your tent. Mm. And then your tent, if it rains, you're not going to get wet and the water just kind of beads up on it, kind of like wax on your car. That's right. That's the idea behind Scotchgard. It kind of beads up on it. Well, with a tent, if you ever spray that on there and you roll that tent back up and put it in the bag, the very first thing you've got to do when you take that thing back out the next year or 6 months later is you have to reapply all your weather protection. Right. If not, you're going to get wet. With Scotchgard and the topical treatments that they upsell you on, they come in and spray a topical on your carpet. When they spray that topical on the carpet and it dries, it's nothing like the way they apply it at the factory. So when it dries on there and you walk across the carpet with your shoes and your socks and just traffic across it and you vacuum, what you literally do is you vacuum up and you walk off all the Scotchgard that's sprayed down because it doesn't penetrate and permeate through the color in the nylon itself. It's just a topical coating, and it's something that will rub off. And so when you pay this extra 25, 30 cents per square foot to have Scotchgard put down, you're really just throwing money away.
Yeah, it's going to be gone.
Wow,
yeah.
Sounds like a scam.
It's been a big scam. I won't call it that because it will work.
It's a subject of controversy.
Yeah, it will work for, you know, about 4 to 6 months, but after that, it's really
it's gone. Not, yeah, it's not, just, a, it's not, just there not there anymore.
Yeah, especially in your traffic layers. Anywhere you don't walk, it's there. Where you do walk, where you don't sit, then you know it's gonna be rubbed off. It's gonna go away.
So y'all don't mess with that.
If one of my clients actually asks for it, I will give it to them. I will do it, but I will not charge for it.
Yeah.
Because that's
just
nice.
It's just, and it costs a 5 gallon bucket runs me about $650 where a 5 gallon bucket runs. Mm. So, but yeah, and I'll spray it down, but I'm not going to charge for it because my reputation's more valuable to me than the fast buck that can be made off that.
Well, see, that's being authentic right there.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, this product technically works. And it's, you know, it's sort of a half-truth almost. It's right. Just not 100%. And you won't back it.
No. If I can't stand behind it 100%, I won't do it. And that's why, you know, the logo that used to be on our trucks was when integrity matters. And that's what's important. It's, you know, showing up and doing the job with integrity, showing up and doing the job and taking care of your client, doing what they need, and sometimes going above and beyond. It's just, like I said, it's what you take care of. You take care of your clients will take care of you, and that's how you stay in business for 70 plus years.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And with Scotchgard, do you ever, I mean, you don't charge your clients, but do you ever kind of explain to them what they're getting into?
Oh, every time.
Okay.
And anytime someone asks for it, I'll tell them, I said, you know, I have it on the truck. Be happy to do it for you, but I'm going to tell you right now, it's not going to work. So, you know, totally your call. Because once the manufacturer Scotchgard is gone, it's gone. There's no getting that back. You know, it's kind of like driving a new car off the lot. It's not new anymore. It may still be new to you, but it's not new anymore. You don't believe that? Try to sell it.
Yeah. I've been through that. That was, I don't like that. So, I mean,
five decades.
Has there been any like major setbacks or major triumphs? Big steps throughout the way?
Nah, not really. I mean, business itself has been fairly steady. It just kind of takes care of itself. We've seen a lot. You've seen a lot of changes. I mean, we've seen, of course, the plush carpet and the shag carpet. You know, come in and out and see all the trends back and forth and to and fro. Back in the 80s, you did a lot of hardwoods. Now we're doing a lot of hardwoods again, and people are flipping back to area rugs. Mm-hmm. So you watch the trends and watch what comes out.
What do you think that is?
Children want something different than what their parents had. Mm-hmm. I mean, realistically, manufacturers need to sell something. So, you know, they keep bringing stuff back. I mean, why are they bringing bell-bottom jeans back? I mean, nobody wore it like those in the 70s. Why are they bringing them back now? But you know, it's like this, whether I think they call it a frenzy now. And if you look, walk into a house and you see one of your friends has this carpet that just kind of looks like a bunch of strings. Well, we used to call that shag back in the 70s.
Oh, okay.
Do you feel like with all these changing trends that makes your business fluctuate? Or do you feel like it still is
It's always a roller coaster. Uh-huh. It's always a roller coaster. You know, you have your steady with your client base, but you know, as things change and trends change, your clients will pull things out of their house. You pull the carpet out, throw an area rug in, and mm-hmm. it just fluctuates back and forth.
Yeah, for sure. I know hardwood is really in style now. I know I'm trying to convince my parents to pull out all of our carpet and put hardwood in the entire house.
That will work for a little while, and then you know, you wake up on a cold winter morning.
Yes, that's what my dad said. He said, "There's no way I'm going to be sitting on a hardwood floor next to the fireplace in the winter."
That's right.
And
that's
hearing right. you, and he said, "And I'm not going to hear you walk around at 3 a.m. at night."
That's
you lose a lot of privacy.
You do. It looks
nice, though. I like it. It looks nice.
Especially got dogs and the little toenails. Yeah,
across the floor.
Well, that, and then you get these nice big scratches and gouges in your floors, and can you fix that?
That's true. My family's really bad about spilling stuff on carpet, though. My mom spills bleach on carpet. Like, we have massive bleach stains, like, covering our house. Like, I don't even know how she does that. It's incredible.
Well, I've seen that done.
Yes.
What's better is in front of the laundry when someone spilled like a 5-gallon bucket of Tide or something.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Then you walk in there, no one bothers to tell you, and you hit it, and you start seeing soap suds fuzz up everywhere. It's like, oh, this is special. This is special.
Jeez.
What do you do in that situation?
You get defoam, a lot of defoam.
Do you ever have to use dehumidifiers?
We do use dehumidifiers, but not really in cleaning. The dehumidifier would pretty much be done. We go back to the flood situation,
yeah.
Right? And if you're doing you know, major floods, then you'd bring them in and you'd try to dry out the drywall and dry out the floor, mm-hmm. the subfloors, and you know, and that type of thing. A lot of the remediation works, and so many companies have gone specifically into doing just that. We've pretty much pulled out of doing that type of work now. There's a lot. And with the major concerns with the mold and the mildew and the lawsuits that have popped up over all that, you know, it's just like, you know what? It's just better.
Not worth it.
Yeah, it's not worth it. It's one of those things. Leave that to someone who really wants to handle all that liability insurance.
For sure.
Now, before we wrap things up here, we got one final question. Mm-hmm. Or one final real question. We got a couple little after. But if there was one thing that you knew now, that you could tell yourself at, you know, the beginning of your career with the family business, what would that be?
Probably what that would have been is at 22 to slap myself in the head and stay with the carpet cleaning. It's one of the things that, you know, we did transition was when Dad decided to retire in 2000. It was probably three and a half years that the business was flatlined. And, you know, he would do just a little bit here and a little bit there, but that's about all he would do. When I took the business over, I had to revive and go back and, you know, contact his clients and let his clients know that, you know, we were back in business and taking it, you know, and running with it.
Mm-hmm.
Had I stayed with him and not decided to sprout out on my own, then I would still have all the Buckhead clients that we used to have, because our Dad's exclusive area was working in what they called the Golden Triangle down in Buckhead. We worked on Haversham, Garrick's, Roxboro, West Paces Ferry, Tuxedo Place, all of the big money areas, Blackland. That's where he worked. That was his clientele.
Nice big house with lots of square footage of carpet.
Lots of old Atlanta money. Mm-hmm. Lots of old Atlanta money. And that's where we worked exclusively for years. I do some work over in the Sugarloaf Country Club and do some work at Country Club of the South and some work over in Thornhill is where, you know, I'm doing a fair amount of work. But, you know, not to the extent that Dad was. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's the only thing I look back. Could I change it? But then again, you know, when you're young, you've got to sprout out and you got to learn, because, you know, it's one of those things that I don't regret doing the technology thing. realistically. It was good. It was a good time. Y2Not was not fun, but
Y2Not.
Yeah.
And do you see any of your kids taking over the business after you?
I don't think so. Like I said, oldest daughter is she's a captain in the Air Force, and so I don't see that happening. Matthew seems to want to go into finance. My middle daughter wants to just be a mommy. So that'd be the best shot I had. And then my youngest right now, another daughter, you know, unless she marries someone who's interested, I don't see it. So, you know, I'm looking about 10, 12 more years, and I don't know what we're going to do. We may be bringing everything down to a close. I'd like to get 100 years out of the business, but we'll see. We'll see.
Well, I believe it'll happen.
Yeah. Can't ever tell. You can't ever tell. Yeah.
Well, Paul, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
And if there's any way our listeners can contact you or anything like that, we want to learn more about the business.
Sure. If you can reach out and touch us if you want to at 770-928-4805. We also have a webpage, www.beckets1945.com. We're on LinkedIn, and we're also on I have a Twitter account, but you probably don't want to follow me on Twitter. You wouldn't like that.
Well, we'll at least get the website and the other information out on Twitter soon. All right. Well, that's a wrap, guys. Thanks so much. I'm Adam Wozniak.
I'm Alex Stoker.
I'm Joy McDonald.
And we are Biz Radio U, pushing knowledge further by spotlighting the best in business.